You need to walk into the room and believe you are the biggest, baddest motherfucker in there. But you also need to walk in there and go, I don't know anything. You know, you need to, you know what room you're walking into. You know, you can be the alpha at whatever table you're in. But also, hey, that guy that's brand new here has been here for 36 minutes, you know, in your office. He might have an idea that's going to change everything.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
We created a text hotline just to add value to you guys as listeners. 435-515-3577. If you guys have questions, anything to do with your taxes, shoot us a text.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley. As always, Kilo G.
What's up, what's up?
Guys, today we have a friend, a good friend, mm-hmm. an individual that we have some history with. It's a familiar face. We haven't seen him in a while, though. You know,
he's been social media.
Yeah, he's through social. We watch what he's doing. But, you know, we met this individual, what was it, 3-4 years ago, something like that, in the Arete Syndicate. Young, hungry. Let's talk about that just for a second, right? Oh, by the way, he owns Visual Installations. Let's talk about what you do for a second and kind of how you got into that business, and then we'll reminisce a little bit about our Arete Syndicate days, you know? So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited. It has been a minute. I think we saw each other in Dallas last year, but before that, it was, well, it was in Whistler before the pandemic.
Yeah, it was so probably it was, 2 years ago prior to that.
It had been a minute. So, and even in Dallas, it was just a quick, hey, how's it going? How's pilot training? And then kind of, we were just kind of passing the hallway. So, so I own Visual Installations. It's a national signs and graphics company. We work with mostly, you know, well, pretty much every single retail chain you can think of. We've done their graphics, restaurants, retail chains, done a lot of like museums and fleet wraps and stuff like that. So it's really just the interior signage. We kind of steer away from the electrical stuff, but
You've been doing that for how long now?
I think I started doing it kind of on the side in 2014, I had a little bit of history in it before that. So I had been just kind of a helper in the construction field, and there are some friends that also were in that were like, hey, we do this on the side, you want to help me? So I kind of knew a little bit about it, and then when I was starting my construction business, he called me and was like, hey, can you help me with something? And I was like, sure. I mean, it's down by the pier where I go fishing. Let's do it. So I drove down to Tampa and did it, and I didn't know what I was making. I was just trying to help him out.
Yeah.
I made more in that 1 hour and taking some graphics off a window than I did an entire week of construction.
Wow.
And I was like, well, screw this, man. I'm going to do these graphics things. Whatever this is, I'm getting into that. And that's, and you know, I like to travel, so I just spent the next almost a decade now on the road. And
You, when you were meeting with Dev, when we were over there chatting before we got on the show, you know, I just kind of want to highlight some of the sacrifices that were made to get you where you are today. And there's obviously continued sacrifices that you're still making to grow your business. But basically what we talked about is, you know, he's built a business that's doing, you know, a few million dollars a year. It's doing good. But the people that helped get him there isn't going to be the same people that's going to get him to 5 million or 10 million, right? You have to kind of shed, you know, the individuals with a low frequency or a low mindset. Maybe they were good in the beginning stages when there wasn't a lot of business going on. But when you really have to systemize something, you can't have these people that aren't all out committed. Yeah. And you've gone through some of the growing pains and the struggles of having to shed old and bring in the new. But some of the individuals that you're bringing in have done what to your business?
They've done pretty well. So yeah, this whole year has been started around December to through April, I would say. We just got rid of a lot of people. A lot of them left on their own, and I had to let go a couple of them. But
is that because the standard was increasing and they just didn't like the changes that, that you were making? And they were just like, man, this isn't what we've always done, and he's da-da-da-da-da, whatever they want to say about you behind your back, and then they bounce?
Yeah, it was. So I started, I literally was like, hey, the accountability is here. Here is, I got it from Andy. He said everybody's job description needs to fit on one sheet of paper, and that is on their desk.
Yeah.
And I did that, and then we used this model called the RACI, which is who's responsible, who's accountable, who's consulted, and who's informed. And each of those had that. So then I was like following up with everybody on each of their metrics and each of their things. They did not like that. Like, they're like, this is how we've always done it. I'm like, yeah, well, you sucked. Like, these clients are leaving us. I'm getting phone calls. I'm getting emails from clients that I have spent almost a decade, sacrificed everything I have to get this client, and they're telling me that they don't want to work with us anymore because of X, Y, or Z. And so it was like, it was a very uncomfortable couple of months where I was like, okay, these standards are not being kept and you need to go. Like, it was, I was making it very clear, like, this is what we're doing. Get on board,
this
get out of the way.
This is how we're doing it. And if you're not okay with doing it this way, then
and peace. it kind of came down to me, because the truth is, once I had got people to do each of the positions, I wasn't being as much of a leader as I should. I never went to, okay, I've made it. Cause I, in my eyes, I haven't done anything. Like, I got a long way, such a long ways to go that I have not accomplished anything.
Yeah.
But I had started to focus on other things. I got distracted. It was the beware of the shiny object. So mm-hmm. I had looked at the franchise investment. I had looked at a couple other investments that I was working on, and that was taking time away from
the business.
And it was for me, I was like, oh, well, I've got these guys, they're doing the thing. Everybody has their metrics. They know what they're doing. As long as this, and this lineup were good. And it wasn't, it was terrible. They just were finding ways around each of your systems that you had put in. Mm. So then I just shed all that. The franchise thing fell through, and I just went back to zero. I was like, okay, what are we good at? Where are we failing? And it was kind of like the story of Xerox. Do you guys know, like, before they actually crashed?
No.
They had, I think it was like $38 billion of debt. And they brought in this new CEO.
How do you get that much in debt?
That is a great question.
That would be a talent.
So basically,
almost.
Yeah,
how did you
terrible.
Get that many people to say yes to give you money when you're already a billion in debt, let alone five or ten? Yeah.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So many of these CEOs are slowly running into the ground. They were like, we're going to do a product every single week, a new one. They had like 300, 400 different products they were doing after the first year. And it's like, how do you keep up with all of the things you got to keep up with on that? How do you keep up with that? And they brought in this new CEO, and she was like, she'd come in from the ground level where she was just in the field saleswoman. And she came in, they had only $100 million and they had $38 billion of debt. $100 million in the accounts and $37 billion of debt. That is the equivalent of having $200,000 of debt, give or take, and $1,000 in your account. Yeah. That's significant.
Yeah.
And she came in and she like scrapped all these extra things. We'll get back to what we're good at. And she turned that company around. She made CEO of the year, and I think it was Chief Executive Magazine or something. She like flipped the company around, became this huge shining star, and then the CEO after her just butchered it and they tanked. But her story though was turning the company around.
This isn't a Xerox story. It's a her story.
Yeah. It was what she did, which was go back to the basics of what we are good at. Stop chasing every single shiny object. Mm. Be good at what you're good at. Become the best in the world at that. And it was everything you hear all the time. And we heard in Arte 1,000 times, and I missed it. I missed the bus on that. I was like, okay, we're getting bigger. Let's add this vertical. And maybe those verticals will come later.
Yes.
But clearly I wasn't the best in the world at this. Mm-hmm. I'm in a $28 billion industry. Why in the world do I only have $2 million of it? Like, what is wrong? Why don't I have at least $1 billion of it? Come on, 1/28th, are you serious?
Yeah.
So it's like, why think so small? You know, in my world, for me, I offended a few people by saying this because they do like thinking in their little world. For me, there's no nobility in playing small. If you're playing small, I don't. Good for you. That is not where I want to play.
Yeah,
that is not the sandbox I want to be in.
Well, it's impossible to live up to your personal full potential if you're just playing small.
Exactly. Like, you can be in your sandbox. I want the beach. Like, what in the world? You know. Yeah, so that's just for me. And it just drives me crazy being around people that are like,
well, that's
good for them.
I don't want to stress that.
Good for them. I have a lot of friends that they
It's less competition for you, bro. If they want to be small minds, then you know, there's less at the top, right?
Exactly. So focus on what I know, what I'm good at, mm-hmm. get better at it, and slowly build, grow smart instead of super fast. Be very smart about what you're doing. Don't chase every shiny object. And you know,
these are lessons it sounds like you've learned the hard way.
I have, to take the words from Dave Ramsey, I have a doctorate in DUMB from the School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of.
Well, hey, dude, I think we all have a couple degrees from that school if you're an entrepreneur.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I just think that, most people like that life of like,
oh, I'm a minimalist. I don't need that much to be happy. And they, and it's like an achievement to them, and they brag about it. And it's like, that's okay. But if people are hating on you because you're like, that's not me, man. Like, I want the beach, you know, I want everything. I want a huge part of my market share. Like, that's who I am.
Yeah.
You know, like, you should be proud of that. And other people should reward it too, instead of being like, well, that's greedy or that's selfish or you're just never happy. Or it's like, no, that's just what I want. That's just what I'm wired
to. Well, we were talking about something before we came in here. You don't have, just because you want that bigger piece of the market share, you don't have to not be unless we moved recently, and the equivalent of all of my clothes, shoes, anything that I wear, it fit into two medium-sized Home Depot boxes, literally.
Yeah.
All of my possessions as far as what I wear on a regular day-to-day. Now, my gym is pretty well stocked. Well, it's like, you know, I have things
like, if somebody walked through your property, then they would be able to identify fitness is important to this individual,
fitness, and guns, and I think we're pretty good about that.
Yeah. They'll know.
That's what I have in my house, you know, as far as my stuff goes.
Three Fs, sir. Fitness, family, firearms.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a different F word now. I was like, oh, really? That's where we're headed. Yeah. As his wife's over there pregnant. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, come on now. We know there's another F in there.
Yeah,
so.
That's following me. Yeah. We can put that in there. That's fine.
What I was saying, though, is like, everybody should be able to celebrate it, though. You know, if someone's like super happy being like, I don't need a lot to live, it's like,
Yeah.
Good for you, man.
Absolutely.
But if someone's like, dude, like, no, I want to freaking run this huge empire and take huge market share, and I want to have, you know, 8,000 employees that I've changed their lives, it's like, heck yeah. Like, we should all be able to celebrate both sides. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but,
no doubt.
But we get so much hate, though, because we're wired like that. We're all wired like that in this room. Is like, and we get called greedy and selfish, and we're never happy, and it's never enough. And it's like, well, nah, man. I just, like, I want to make change. I want to make impact, right?
I think it was John Rohn or something like that that said something about the definition of success. It's not necessarily a dollar figure or, you know, owning the whole beach or whatever. It's literally designing your life and living that designed life and honoring that. And if the designed life is, I want to live down by the river in a van, and that's what I want to do, and you're able to pull it off, you are a success, right?
Yeah. Right.
Like, it's how you identify of what success is to you. And everybody's level of success is going to be a little bit different. But what does your ideal life look like? And can you actually pull it off?
Yeah.
That's the definition of success, right?
Well, that comes right back to, again, when we were talking, Patrick Bet David, he made this post. And he also, I was at his event recently, and he had said, mission is emotion. So it could be the chip on your shoulder. It could be that one comment that somebody that you really loved made that just like, oh, whoa, you know, you kind of get rocked by that. And like, oh, well, I'm going to show them by X, Y, or Z, whatever. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that. I will say a lot of that happens with me. Like, there are plenty of mornings where, pardon my language here, but like, fuck that guy is what gets you up. I mean, it just, there are days that way. But also,
and you, like, we won't pardon your language. It's okay. Yeah.
If you're listening to this, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Huh.
But no, it's kind of more, we talked about the work smarter, not harder. There's so many people that say that, and they're just the people that go to every single conference. They don't know how to execute. They're trying to find ways out of getting out of the work. And I'm like, okay, look, if you have to go to work or if your wife or spouse, I don't care who, black, white, green, blue, orange, I don't care whatever gender you want to be. If your significant other has to go to work still because your business isn't successful enough, why are you sleeping? Like, why are you, I mean, not necessarily, yes, be healthy, but at the same time, like, why is it such a big deal for you to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Because you need to do some extra work to get going. If your mom or dad can't retire, if you cannot sustain them, why the fuck are you sleeping?
Mm. Yeah.
Seriously, like, dude, I get up at 4 o'clock every morning. I go to bed at 10 if I'm lucky. The other night was the first time I've slept more than 5 hours in months. And it's not, that's not a badge of honor of, oh my gosh, I work so hard. I can't sleep. Like, I literally take.
Your goals are keeping you up.
They are. My mom can't. She has to keep working. Why am I not working? Why am I on a trip right now for my own anniversary? Because my mom, she still has to work. And my wife, you know, this is a huge, huge blessing that she was able to quit. She's able to be a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. For Gabriel, who's about to turn two, and then Michael, who'll be born in January, it's like, that is a huge blessing, and that should be considered a celebrated milestone. But my mom, she still has to freaking work. I should not be sleeping. I should not be taking a trip. You know, there's a thousand, like, that. You talk about emotion. You know, your mission better be that emotional. Mm-hmm. You know, it needs to be tied that much. And well, that's just my mom. And there's 1,000 other people that I want to help. Yep. You know, I'm supporting 5 missionaries overseas. Me and Caitlin have different children in Compassion International as far as our church. I was supporting people overseas in the mission field before I paid myself and my businesses. Because I was that guy. I was living in Ecuador and Kenya and Uganda and all those places where I was like, man, I hope somebody sees my blog post because I sure as crap could use some money right about now. You know, like I was that guy.
Yeah.
So, we made that commitment. Like,
it wasn't
a 10% thing. At the time, that was all we had. Yeah. You know, that was all I had. And when I first started and Caitlin was in school, it was just me and my shepherd that were on the road always doing these jobs because there's people that had to be supported. So your mission, you better find whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Like,
and it better be fuel.
It better be
ingrained that deep like it is in you, man.
You can't fuck that guy. You know, can't be the only reason you get up every day. Yeah. Like there's discipline. I've been going through kind of a dark phase for a couple of months, and I'm starting to feel like I'm coming through it a little bit because too many days was, you know, fuck that guy, you know, or it was like I have to because
it's
of
okay
this
to use a negative emotion to extract something positive, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm a big believer in your ability to take a negative and turn it into a positive will determine how your life ends up because 100% of people will deal with negative situations.
Absolutely.
Now, what do they do about those negative situations? Can they find some sort of silver lining?
Yeah.
Can they find the message that issue is trying to basically say, hey, look here, here's a problem, right? That's all it's trying to do. Anything that's causing you pain or struggle is trying to teach you a lesson.
Yeah.
Your job is to take it from a negative and turn it into a positive.
Yeah.
And you seem to do that very, very well.
Yeah, you actually hit on it exactly. All of my strengths are definitely weaknesses too, you know, because it isn't healthy for me to not get enough sleep over a long period of time like that. Like there's been way too many times where I've pulled 24-hour days. There's that viral reel going around, you know, some people work night shifts, some people work day shift. I work all shifts. That's great for periods of time. Please, as somebody who's spent a significant amount of my life in the hospital, you need to take care of yourself. I'm not saying not to. I'm just saying when you're driven enough and your mission's strong enough, staying up all night isn't going to be a problem for you. Like you need to be that driven, you know, that is the case. I need to pull back maybe to a degree. I mean, I wear my Monday shirt today, but like, it's like you freaking, you have to be able to control yourself, control your mind a little bit. I'm not very good at that. That's half of why I can't sleep. I go to lay down.
What do you do to try to control it? What are some of the things that you do on a day-to-day basis without fail that are deposits in controlling your mind?
Discipline. I do a lot of things. Okay. So I get up at 4:00 every day.
Yeah.
Every single day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday,
that's hard.
All that stuff.
Yeah,
4:00. I work out from about 5 to 6, give or take. I adjust what time I work out in the morning depending on a couple of things. But I'm up at 4. I read. I work. I do a few things. It's like offense, essentially. Education and what's pushing the business forward. Getting my head around to what projects are happening. All those things. I work out. I have my personal trainer, Delilah. She does my programming every week. And so I go down to the gym and it's kind of separated from the house so I can have the music going and I work out. I work out very hard. Like it's not just I stretch, we're good for the day. No, I work out very hard for an hour. And I kind of have that 7 to 8 where I'm kind of getting ready for the day. Gabriel usually wakes up. I kind of get some, you know, help Caitlin a little bit in the morning. Then I get a shower and I work. And I work from 8 to probably about 6 at the office. And that is kind of, I'm still kind of in the business more than I am just working on it, but it's definitely, I would say that needle's moved to about 50-50. I'm working about 50% on the business and 50% in it. If I'm doing, you know, I don't like my desk very much, so I end up in the field more than I should, and that's where my discipline lacks because I'm very good at what I do. I'm not very good at the business.
People like to enjoy and do what they're good at.
Yeah, and so it's hard for me to focus on this stuff. I've learned a lot of strategy from Patrick Bet-David over the last couple of months. So I am getting better at thinking several moves ahead, planning those moves ahead, not just thinking about it, making those plans and having that. And then when I get home, even then, I mean, there's either church or I try to shoot my bow or something that is...
Get you your mind off of
I do business. Try to. I started around 8:00 where I really try to, like, I'm not doing business as much as I can, you know, whether it's watching a show or something and taking a few things to try to help me fall asleep. And I try to go to bed around 10. But as soon as I lay down, my brain is just like, all right, so here are some things we can talk about.
Yeah.
Well, here's how you could have handled this a lot better.
Well, you've been busy all day. And it's stuff's coming at your brain all day. You're solving problems. And then right when you lay down and things aren't coming at you, your brain starts coming at you.
Yeah.
Right? It has the ability to, instead of absorb information and then react to it, now it just has the ability to free think and throw a bunch of shit at you, right?
Yeah. And it's like, when we had talked about was like, I'm really good at the mindset stuff. I'm good at principles. I'm good at discipline. I'm good at those things. But I'm really bad at the strategy. I'm really bad at thinking ahead too far. I got the big, huge goals that I want to hit, but the stuff in between is super hard to find those mile markers and the things that really matter. Because you got to live your life too. I mean, you got to have.
Is it hard to find because you're so much in the work? So that since it's right up against your face, you're not far enough back from your business to be able to see those benchmarks and see that progress. Because when you're in the fight, it's still, you know, you're not a spectator. When you're watching from the stands, it might look like a different fight than the one that you're actually in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I haven't. So I used to have before the pandemic, I was a lot more healthy about it. I traveled enough where I was like living on the road. I was spending at least 100 nights a year in a hotel, if not more, for several years. And we were driving about 100,000 miles a year. Like, that's a lot of driving, a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of almost therapy, you know, for some people. And when I would go to a place that I liked to be in, I would take an extra day. Since the pandemic, I have not had that chance because we went from working in 50 states to working in one. Florida was like the only state open, and then Georgia and Texas opened. And so we were starting to open up in other places, and we were able to pivot a little bit, we were able to pivot a little bit.
The 6 feet signs and stuff
and the sneeze guards and stuff. And all of our clients, they had to adjust all their stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do a lot of stuff for Chase, and there's, 3,300 of those banks across the country. So there's stuff to do. But it was not nearly what we were doing. And, anyway, I say all that because now the last couple of years, I haven't taken the time for myself. I'm an introvert. I want to be by myself to recharge.
Yeah.
I used to go to Wyoming or Montana or someplace, you know, I like Wyoming just cause it's the most pro gun and least populated state we got. And it's just like, you're by yourself. You're able to just relax and take a second.
More bullets than people. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah. And fishing, you know, I used to fish and stuff. I haven't done any of my hobbies in a while, you know? And so I kind of noticed that this year I did go to Wyoming for a couple of days and, you know, just took a second and I noticed a huge difference, in my own ability to
your demeanor,
think, everything just was clear. Like, it just felt better. And then yesterday when we were in the Grand Canyon, we didn't have signal. We didn't have nothing, but we just had good freaking view, beautiful drives.
Yeah.
The weather was nice. And I was like, dag nabbit, I've got to get back to that habit of doing that every quarter or something like that, you know, because it's killing me. I love that we live in Florida. I love that we're close to the beach, but you got to have the freaking mountains, you know, you got to have that. You know, you got to have that middle ground. And, you know, we have this running joke where, you know, we honeymoon in Hawaii, but Hawaii, we joked that when God created the earth, he was kind of like, he had a little bit left in every bottle and just kind of dumped it on Hawaii. Cause you got the mountains, you got the ocean, you got the volcanoes, you got different color sand beaches, you got all the stuff just all combined into one thing.
You got the desert.
And, they even have a little bit of that. Yeah. So it's just funny.
Yeah, the jungle, the desert, they have it all. Yeah,
they do. And so we were like, you know, maybe we should head out there.
Have you been to Kauai?
Yeah. I have, we did. Yeah. We take advantage, my clients, since they're national. We did a bunch of
I'll service that
there.
One.
Exactly. I literally did. I was like, so I made it.
Everyone's hoping that they get the call up for the Hawaii install.
Three quarters of that island is just majestic and beautiful. And then you drive all the way over to that Grand Canyon side, the Kauai's Grand Canyon. It's like deserty, dude.
It's the weirdest.
It doesn't, look like Hawaii.
It doesn't.
It's pretty cool, though. On one side of the road, you see desert. On the other side, you see ocean. You're like,
yeah. It's weird. It is a funny joke, but I would negotiate contracts where I'd be like, okay, I will take everything east of Mississippi off your hands if you give me Hawaii and Alaska too. And they're like, done. And so then I would go to Hawaii. I would do all the islands and I would do those myself. Head over head over to Alaska and do those too.
Heck yeah.
And you know, it was just like you get that amount of travel and that relaxation. Cause I like what I do and I'm in a place that I want to be at. So we take that extra day. I went to the the hot springs, the Chena Hot Springs in Alaska. I got to see the Northern Lights, and I went and stayed and hiked Angel's Rocks. And, dude, it was funny because they're like, wait, you're going to Angel's Rocks? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, is anybody going with you? And I'm like, no. Okay, what time are you getting out? So I, like, fill out this form, and they're like, hey, if you are not back and you do not call this number by this time, we have to send the Rangers. Yeah, they're like, we had to go find you because that means you've been eaten by a bear or something. Like, I was like, huh, that's right. I should probably have checked that. You know,
yeah. Don't worry,
I'm a redneck, man. I just go do stuff. You know, I grew up in backwoods Tennessee, so I just do stuff and figure it out as you go. So it was like, you know.
Well, just so far in your story, man, it's like you kind of embody what a lot of great, most great entrepreneurs are like, dude. Like, we struggle to take care of ourselves because we're, our mission is like really to give and serve. You know what I mean? It's like, man, I want to give to my mom. I want to help retire her. I want to make sure my wife can quit. I want to give all my employees great lives, you know? Yeah. And then you're like, oh man, I'm struggling to, you know, work on the business and I'm still in the business. So then you're finding, you know what I mean? Like, you have to really force like your you time, your recharge time to get clarity. But really, like, your fuel is to serve and give, man. Yeah. And so that's really what embodies like every great entrepreneur. And so all these challenges and these dark times are really to serve a greater time and really bring that light to you too. We have to go through that dark shit to get to the light times, you know what I mean? But we do. We give a lot. We sacrifice a lot because our mission is to give.
Well, yep. I was sharing with him, you know, when I came in as a partner, zero money in the account, $66,000 on a credit card, like, that's dark times, right? Like, everything visually looks very bleak, right? And the thing about entrepreneurs is you have to have such a positive mindset because more often than not in business, things look bleak, right? Like, where am I going to get the next job? Or, hey, I've got to get a loan to stay afloat, or I've got to float this on a credit card, or how am I going to get this done? It just doesn't feel like you're winning. It doesn't look like you're winning. No. But yet, for whatever reason, our dumbasses continue to show up and do what we think that we need to do in order to get the result. And then time takes care of the rest.
Yeah.
As long as you stay positive and you continue to move forward, time will do what it does. Yeah. As long as you're making good decisions on a day-to-day basis, time is your best friend. Yeah. If you're making errors and judgments every single day, time is not going to be your best friend. Yeah. The decisions that we make on a day-to-day basis have a greater impact than long-term than what people even understand. Like, they really just need to ask themselves, if I continue to live this day over and over, what's the compound effect going to be in 10 years? And there's plenty of people that make a ton of negative decisions on a day-to-day basis or errors in judgment, but they're not projecting out 10 years to see how catastrophic those errors in their daily judgment will be 10 years from now, right? And you're doing a lot of things right, but that doesn't mean that you're going to escape struggle or escape the darkness. And in most cases, entrepreneurs learn the most about themselves, not in the light. You know, not when you're going to the bank and cashing that big check. Yep. It's when times are bleak and everything doesn't seem like it's going to pan out. And then you find a new version of self that continues to press on, right? And that's what you're currently doing right now in business, right? Like, COVID obviously had some damage on the business, and you're in the process of rebuilding, correct?
Talk
a little bit about that, just so that other people that are listening that may have similar situations as you can kind of say, okay, I'm not alone in this battle, right? This is part of the process.
No, it really is. It's definitely been, it's how you look at it. So back up a second. One of our overwhelming, it's like our umbrella core value. It's not even on the list, but all of them were based around the loyalty. So loyalty to each other, loyalty to our clients, loyalty to our vendors. So I have really gone out of my way and I have built an entire business doing what nobody else wants to do. So when you're in a blue collar industry, first of all, it's skilled labor. So there are people that are really good and there's some people that are really bad. And it's not about somebody that can learn it on YouTube. Like, you have to learn how to do it. And blue collar is a lot of apprenticeships. You can go through trainings and things like that, but it's not like, I'm sure there are vehicle wrappers out there that I've learned from YouTube. Good on you. I'm not saying that you can't. You can learn almost anything from YouTube. What happens is the guys that have been through a 3M or an Avery training or something like that, they are kind of like, trying to think of a nice way to put this. Let's just say they don't want to take everything. They will take only certain jobs that pay exactly right and the profit hits and all this stuff. Versus me, I'm looking at the long term of this thing. I'm not trying to make the sale today. I want that client.
You're building
for life.
A relationship.
Yeah. So when I had a client, how I got in the business, I had just one client and I just did everything for them. And I was all over the place and I was doing $250,000. It was awesome. I was really excited. And for a redneck, that's a freaking lot of money. Yeah. Now we're doing a couple of million and I'm like, dude, I'm freaking broke. You know, but it's kind of like,
more money you make, it's almost like the broker you feel. Yeah, no, you're like, damn.
But so when I had, basically the owner, one of his sons had moved to Florida. And so then all my work was gone. Naturally, it's his son. I'm not going to diss him for that. He got in an argument with me. And, one of those, chip on my shoulders that we talked about earlier was I remember the exit number 387. I was getting onto it. And he told me I would never be anything. I would never be anything as good as he is in the industry and all that stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh,
I'm going to print that out.
Yeah. You know? And, I was like, oh my goodness, you know, like, you know what you just did, you know, like you don't say that to someone in my family and he knows my whole family. So like, you just literally gave me, all the ammunition I needed. Now I will say we have since made up and we are working together and doing things and it's been good, but I remember that. You know, and
people don't forget.
Yeah. And so that next day I started finding other clients because I was loyal to him. I was straight up loyal. I have driven. I'm not even making this up. I have driven from Orlando, Florida, Miami, Florida to Sacramento, California, only to find out the job got canceled. Wow. After making that drive.
Yeah.
And that was for him. You know, it was one of his PMs. And so it's like I was straight up loyal. I went over backwards for him. Yeah. And so when you get told that, and I was like, oh snap. So the next day I started looking for other clients, and this one client, she gave me a shot. I did something for Dick's Sporting Goods, and again it was me and Sanson. We drove up freaking early in the morning, got to this thing on
and
time.
That's his dog.
That's my dog. Yeah. It's German Shepherd. He's been with me from the very beginning. He's the silent partner. He is. So we get to that job. We did it. And that was the first job I did. And that client now does about $250,000 a year with me. But that first year, it was like a grand total of $10,000. And then I think the next year it was like 50. The next year was 100. And it's kind of leveled off between 1 and 200,000. I think this year though we did a quarter. But it's like that loyalty of taking that stuff, that made no sense to go do that job.
Yeah.
If you planned it out between the drive time, the cost of the fuel, and my expertise in the field, it wasn't even freaking close, you know. But I was loyal to them there, and it wasn't just Florida after that. We ended up, you know, like, hey, we do it in all these other places. But I've done that with a lot of clients. There have been clients where even as we grew, I've made personal guarantees where, like, look, if somebody royally screws up on a job site, like, it's awful, I will personally go fix it.
Have you had to do that?
I have. I was in Miami on a job, and I finished up my job, and I was about to head home, and our Alaska guy had screwed up. So I literally flew from Miami to Alaska that night and fixed. They overnighted the graphic, and I fixed it the next morning.
Wow.
And that was it was one of those jobs, too. Again, this client does, I think, about $150,000 a year with us now. It wasn't that big then. You know, like, it wasn't that big a deal. Now, I can't do every single fix like that. I'm going to be in the Pacific Northwest for a couple of weeks for a client that does about $250,000 with us, I think. They're one of the top two clients with us now. They do tons of work with us. And the owner of the company himself called and was like, could you please fix this for us in the Pacific Northwest? And so that's where I'm going to after this. My truck is getting shipped here, and I'm going to be there for a little bit. But that one in Miami, it was against everything. Like, it didn't pay for the trip. It didn't pay for anything. But that install, it was 11 degrees outside, so you're not supposed to install this particular type of window graphic under like 50 or something or 55 degrees, but they're like, please can you just make it work somehow? And I'm like, goodness gracious. So
this is in Alaska.
It's 11 degrees, so I'm spraying the window, water's freezing on it. I had to go get this special type of stuff, spraying the window again, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of working. And I have the heater blasting on this graphic to keep it warm. But, I mean, you go from a warm graphic to 11 degrees, your graphics, it's over, you know? And so I made it work, but it was like, I had specifically been asked, and I did that, and it would cost at my own cost because I was looking at the future. And I'm working with tons of the PMs there now and building that up, and it was just about, I can do that. I will take care of you. I've got you. And that loyalty to our clients and our vendors, is a big deal. But that's also loyalty to the people on my team.
Yeah.
You know, we constantly have the I say all the time, I don't want to be the only Lamborghini in the parking lot. I don't have a Lamborghini. I almost got one and I decided not to. But it was just like, whatever you want, whatever winning is to you, I want to make sure you got that.
Yeah.
And the people that took me up on that, they're still there. They're going to be people I can see far enough in the future to go, these guys are going to be the ones that get me to 20, 30, 40 million, you know, because they are hungry. And they're like, we are with you. They have specifically come to me like, we've got you. We are with you. We will do this with you. Like we're hitching our wagon to yours because we know you're going somewhere.
Yeah.
And we want to be there when you get there. And so there's only a few people like that. Some of them are like, hey, we got another couple more years of this. And then, you know, me and my husband are going to go do this. Like, okay, good for you. While you're here, this is what I need you to do.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not every employee, no matter how big you get, is going to be as that sold out. And that's fine. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, what do I know compared to, you know, you guys have a lot bigger operation, but not every employee that I've come across is there for buy that in. Big. Yeah, yeah. That level of buy-in. And that's okay. I think that not everybody is built for that.
No.
But when you do find the ones that are buying in, you invest in them. Like for sure you invest in them.
Well, you've been doing that. You know, you talked about a lady that you hired and you've been investing into her and she's been filling gap after gap after gap, making your life a lot easier.
Yeah. So this morning, Kirsten, she sent me a text. I sent her a text. I was in the gym before we came over here and I texted her. I was like, hey, is everything okay? Do you need anything from me? I got about 30 minutes while I'm in the gym. I have signal before we head out. We're not going to have signal again. She's like, nope, we got it. That is a text that I have been dying to get for a freaking long time. You know, you know, we had an ops guy just walk out. It was the first time. It was the whole explosion, middle finger walkout, everything you can think of.
All the fun stuff and that you got to deal with as a business owner. And the drama has been
going
on
for months still. He sends me DMs or text messages. It's all about him and all this stuff. But when he left, she stepped in. She built out all the stuff. We used to take months to get a project manager up and going. Now we have one that came in and they were doing 80% of what they needed to do within a week, you know, because she built this SOP and removed some things and made it simpler. And we eliminated a few programs and condensed it into a couple of them. And it was just this, she has really gone out of her way. And I've given her two big bonuses and two raises. Like she is just crushing it. And I'm like, that is somebody I'm going to invest in right there. She is working like nobody's business. She's on salary, but they still turn in our, you know, their hour sheets. And she is working almost as much as I am. And that's saying something, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, that's crazy that she's putting that much effort into this.
Yeah.
And she's taking it seriously. And I'm like, I'm going to invest into her everything I can to make sure she sticks it out here because I want to keep her.
Because you want more of those texts.
I do. Yeah. You know? I want more of that. Be good. Like, you got it. I was like, hey, that's got, all I need you to know, see.
Look over your shoulder like, is somebody punking me right now? Where's Ashton Kutcher? Yeah. You know, I'm back. Like, no, you got 10 fires at home, fucker. You got to get back.
Exactly, know? Yeah. So, yeah, definitely, you know, she is somebody I'm pushing on that. And we have another guy who's been working in the field for a little bit that he is going to take a lot, even more off that plate because she is able to manage the projects and he can be more like vendor relations almost where he can help somebody through their issues on their job sites and stuff. And that takes up a lot of my time. It's finding the installer and
troubleshooting it all. Stuff. Yeah.
And so he's been in the field for about a year now, and he owned a company doing graphics and sign stuff too, so he can actually understand a little bit, even more than I do in some cases. So I'm like, those are the people that like I need.
You want to build around.
I do. And he specifically has come to me and is like, dude, I'm bought in. Like, let's do this. Like, and I was like, okay, that's all I need to hear. You know, so he's got the hunger. He's very into personal development and stuff, and I'm really excited to see what he can bring.
Yeah.
So you were you like, I know that you're nationwide, but do you ever plan on like having multiple locations around the nation so that you're not necessarily having to ship people from Florida or do you?
Well, no, we are. So we have about 400 or 500 vendors across the country and they're local to those things. Now we're trying to increase that because I know a lot of people that have like a couple thousand.
Gotcha.
Because like this week alone, I had to tell someone I couldn't. I tried really hard. There's this job in Oregon. It's in central Oregon. And most of our guys are like Eugene and Portland.
Yeah.
And I even got a guy that's like 30 minutes away from the job, but he's like, I'm sorry, I just can't. You know, he's a vehicle wrapper and this is more of a vendor or like if they were doing an office building, putting up that sign right there or the graphics you have on your front door. It's like a decor package is what we call it. And so he's like, I got these cars going to SEMA. I got to wrap them. I'm sorry, man. That's what I got to focus on. But like, if you have 2000 installers versus 500, I mean, you should never say no.
Yeah.
You know, you should be able to get covered, you know, like that's, even if we don't hit our margin, if you're helping the client, I'm okay with that. You know, I don't want to lose money on a job site, But I mean, that happens occasionally where
you have to build a network.
Yeah.
And in this case, your network is your net worth. It has the ability to make you stronger, bigger, faster as an entity.
Yeah. It's kind of I call it a living list just because like we had 400 or 500.
So if you're an installer, hit them up.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Yeah. But no, that we have people on there and we have, you know, our A team and our B team. We have a blacklist too. Like there are guys, one of them's in jail now. And I didn't know he was like this deep into some stuff, but like he got his ban from working with somebody because he proclaimed himself to be this greatest installer in the area and all this stuff. He's done all these things for celebrities. He can just talk his way into any room. It's really weird. He was awful. And then these celebrities finally caught up to him and he pissed off the wrong lawyer. He's like, hey, this lawyer's like, hey, I want a wrap. I want this Lexus or something that he got. No, it was a new Mercedes. It was a really nice AMG and everything. And he's like, I want this wrapped. He did such a bad job. Like, it was so bad. It was. I saw it, and I'm like, oh, my God. Everybody in the industry knows who I'm talking about. But he so much that he called himself, his name, the rap god. He literally thought he was that good. He was so bad. Pissed his lawyer off so much. Went through the whole thing and got himself put in jail for, like, a long time.
Wow.
It was, like, 6 to 7 years. Like, he's in jail. But I was like, dude, you – and I actually started that process. Like, don't – do what you're told to do. Like, if you get a scope of work, do the scope of work. Let's work together. Let's make this a thing. But don't just not do it. Say that you did. Go through this whole process of getting us banned from working with this retailer. And then
you contracted out to this individual time or two? Yeah.
And he screwed us over so bad, I called 3M because that's the other thing. So 3M, they have a code of conduct. So once you do their training,
this is like the 3M's the people that like print.
They're probably the biggest name, I would say, in as far as brand of vinyl and training and all that stuff. I mean, there's a few others, Avery and some Geek Wraps, and a few other people have started to build their own training, which is great. And I'm excited to see where that goes. I've actually been in touch with somebody about adding training into my shop.
Yeah.
So that we can start pumping out new installers that are at the level we need. Because the more A players we can get, the better, so we don't have this problem. But I called 3M. I was like, hey, your guy is not following the code of conduct. Here's this, this, and this. And they're like, oh, you're like the 10th person to tell us we got this. And they revoked his license. Mm-hmm. And then he ended up getting pursued by that lawyer and this big mess. And it's like, look, I'm not trying to scare people from working with me. I'm just going, look, you are doing these things. I got his vendors calling me asking if I'll pay them because he pulled a gun on one of them saying like, hey, they're like, hey, can you pay me? He pulled a gun on him. And I'm like, are you serious? And now I feel responsible because his guys did some of these installs.
Yeah. Mm.
The ones he did were just totally like taking out the client, build us for him.
I can't see why he's in jail, dude. I mean, I'm not putting two to two together.
A mess. Like, it was a huge mess. And one of his vendors actually works with me pretty regularly now. And he was a good guy. He was the one that got the gun pulled on him. And I was talking to him. He's like, yeah, dude, it got really, like, it got dangerous. He's known more than just by our own industry, and it was pretty bad, apparently.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, I'm not trying to scare people from working with us, but, like, do what you say you're going to do. If you're a blue-collar guy, you know, a spit handshake is as...
I'll just take one without the spit.
Yeah. is as binding as any lawyer contract you can come up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, you know, you have to... learn how to, I could go 1,000 ways with this right now, and I'm trying to figure out which way I want to go with it. Most of the people I work with, they just want to be appreciated for what they do. Like, a lot of people don't want to do the blue-collar stuff. I was in an install. Me was on an install, like, on this job, and it was on I don't remember which university I was on. But a couple of the students walked by, and she was like, hey, you better get your grades up, or you're going to be doing this. And I was like, what? You know, it's like that happens. They look at me like, oh, yeah, you're going to be doing some blue-collar job. You don't get your grades up. And and I was like, I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, hey, you probably should get your hands dirty a little more often.
Yeah.
But as far as blue-collar guys, I was talking to Charles Covey, and he's like, they just want to be appreciated. Stick to your word. It's all the basic, normal core values of human beings, you know, that you're leading, hundreds of them. And you have to have this list that's always growing and expanding, and also you have to take people off of it because there's a lot of people out there. There's a guy we paid through check, and it just didn't make it. Yeah. So I texted him, hey, we canceled the check. Send it with your credit card link. You know, I'll pay the fee. I hate paying the fee. So I was like, you just send it. I'll pay it. So we did. The check came in the next day. He tried to cash it.
Oh, wow.
And then he tried to bill us for the $45 fee he got. And I'm like, dude, I'm not paying that fee. I already told you that I paid you through the credit card. You know, like we're not doing this. Yeah. So you got those bad apples.
My credit card fee.
Yeah, I know. So I was just like, you have those bad apples. But a lot of blue collar guys, they just want to be appreciated for the stuff they go through. Cause I have to tell my PMs this too. Like, look, it sounds like, oh yeah, just go put the sticker up. It's not just putting the sticker up. Like if you're going to New York City, dude, I've installed there once. I will never do it again. I've installed in all 50 states personally, and I'm proud of that. I ain't going to, there's some place I'm not going anymore.
Yeah.
New York City is one of them. But if you have an installer going to New York City, first of all, you have to fight the amount of insane traffic and crazy people to get in there. Pay an unholy amount of money for a parking space that's probably like 10 blocks away. Drag all your tools and a box of graphics all the way to the store you're getting to. Then when you finally get into the store, if you're my size, you can't even fit through the door hardly to get in to get to freaking your area. Like, it's insane.
So maybe you need to hire people that are our size.
Probably.
send them to New York, you know, the tighter fitting.
Well, I mean, you got cities. That problem too. I drive a truck. So you bring a truck into New York City. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like, it's not truck friendly. I'm a redneck. I'm proud of my truck. I don't want to drive a freaking little Prius. Okay. I'm just not going to do it. So. Yeah. You have to deal, like the installers are dealing with a lot more than just put a graphic up. You could have a manager that is just got a God complex. You could have a graphic on the window that wasn't supposed to be there based on the photo that was sent to us by the client. You could have, you know, an accident that's going to hold you up and make you late. There's a thousand things that they have to deal with. And so they need to be very much appreciated for the stuff that they do. It's a lot of freaking work, you know, it sounds simple, you know? And
well, what I'm picking up from this is like, even if you have a standard, you still have to do business with other humans, with other people, whether it's employees in your organization, whether it's vendors, whether it's customers. And when you add the human element in, it can, you know, bring some drama to your life, right? So like looking at you, we know that you're an individual that has a certain standard. You have values, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that negates you from having to deal with problems or issues, because not everyone's going to have standards or values. You might be operating an organization right now that has standards and values, but your employees might not be honoring those standards and values, which makes your company look bad. Now, you might have vendors that's not honoring your standard that makes your company look bad. There's certain things that you don't have the ability to control. It's up to you to, again, to continue to tweak, change, and make the adjustments so that you can insulate yourself from as many of these instances as you possibly can. But it's not going to be bulletproof. You can have the standards. You can have values. You're going to deal with a bunch of shit. That's just is what it is, right? Yeah. And you just explaining what you explained in terms of the guy pulling a gun. Look, dude, that's not in your standards. That's not in your values. Yeah. But it still happened, right? Yeah. And how you respond to that matters, right? You adjust so that it doesn't happen, you know?
we jokingly refer to, I don't know, maybe I do have ADD, I have no idea, but I kind of just like all over the map with my stuff, whether it's a topic or I just can't, like, one thing sparks another thing of all the stuff you deal with as a business owner, because it's not, you can't just focus
that's
on
called
the one
a,
thing.
That's called a business mind. This is.
My team is so funny. It's like, okay, so which one did you want me to execute on? And I'm like, well, how many did I say? Like,
tell me what I just told you, and then I'll tell you, because I forgot half of it already.
It's real, man. It drives me crazy, and I definitely catch myself just, like, you can't just think about one thing. Like, you can't focus on just the vendors, because you also have to focus on the clients. You have to focus on the margins. You have to focus on the taxes. You have to focus on just cash flow in general. You have to focus on your family life, your own life. You know, there's a million things that you have to juggle as a business owner. Yeah. As a regular human being, you add a business owner to it. I mean, now you have not just your family, but you have your team's family. They're all family now.
Yeah.
Like they rely on you to make sure that they're taken care of.
Well, when you're core value or core of core values is loyalty, that's a tough one too, because I mean, let's be real, man, in order to be loyal, you've got to pick and choose where you're going to be unloyal. You know what I mean? And that dude that was jeopardizing your whole team, like, you can't be loyal to him anymore. You know what I mean? And so you have to identify, like, where am I going to be loyal and where can't I be loyal? Right. And the one thing that's going to make sure that it's always centered is, as long as you're loyal to a mission, right? The people that are all loyal to that mission, you're going to be loyal to, you know, but you know, when you got vendors that are jeopardizing the entire mission, it's like, now you got to choose to be unloyal to them. And it's really hard, because you like your client, like that you started out $10,000 a year. Now he's at $250,000 a year. If he started jeopardizing the whole mission, you know, of like what your company's built on, it's like, man, you might have to actually part ways with that person. And so, but only if they're jeopardized, right? And so it's a lot of pressure as a business owner when your core of core values is loyalty, and then you got to choose where to be unloyal. You know, that's hard too.
Yeah, I mean, you have that same. I've been having the same conversation even with the client that I'm going to be in the Pacific Northwest for a little bit. Yeah, I think that is the right thing to do right now.
Yeah,
that probably won't be the case in 6 months. I don't think me being the answer is going to last much longer. It is working right now to go fix that stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think
that. But that'll only get you so far.
Exactly.
Right?
So it'll like hold you back from. Yes. That means there's a couple of weeks.
It'll
that
carry
I'm
you
not.
To a certain point and then hold you back from there, right?
Exactly. So it's carried us. I think this is one of those things that, you know, it carried us to the couple of million and a little over, but like it's not going to get us to 10. You know, it's not going to get us to 30.
You can't be that guy at 10.
I can't be that. I can't be that at 4.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
at 5. Like we're breaking capacity. We're hitting capacity and like boiling over even now. So this is a, you know, in a way, I've tied a lot more to this trip than normal, just because I haven't seen my brother since the pandemic. During the pandemic is when the last time I saw him. So I was like one of two people on the plane to get to Washington. And this is where another loyalty thing. I flew up there because the client or the vendor, his grandmother was one of the first initial people that died in the Seattle nursing home early on. And he was like, I can't risk going to do this job. So I did. I went to Orcas Island. Me and my brother did. And we went and did it and had a good time. So this for me is me and him seeing each other. He got married since then. I haven't met his wife.
The job was on Orcas Island?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a trip.
Dude, it was
I've
awesome.
Been there.
It was beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
It is awesome.
But there's a lot of things you got to do, you know? Yeah. Like jumping on the ferry. The ferry stops at several islands. I can imagine that was a
It was a good day. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun. But, you know, I haven't seen my brother. I haven't met his wife. You know, the time then Montana, Wyoming. This is, again, I told him I'd take Montana, Wyoming if they gave me the other 1,000 sites of these certain states.
Yeah.
So I get some time to myself, and I haven't done a cross-country trip in a while, and so it's just kind of a nice last little good trip.
So did your plans change because you're shipping your truck out here, or was that the plan the entire time?
We were going back and forth about it because we were going to – once we realized that renting the vehicle was just – renting the vehicle versus shipping the truck out here, it kind of was about the same. Mm. The part where it got more expensive was – dropping the unknown massive fee that would hit if I drove the rental car back to Florida.
Mm.
And my truck is like my security blanket. All of my tools are in it. I've got one of those deck systems with the huge drawers and stuff and everything that I need from being, you know, in the outdoors to tools for my trade.
Your comfort blanket. It's something that's familiar when you're out in the world.
Well, when you're also, you know, when you're doing
And when you've lived in that motherfucker.
Literally.
It's like a home on wheels. You know?
But it has all the tools in it. And when you travel and you bring tools, you end up having to you come back with a whole ton of tools. You just have to throw the tools away. But just having that stuff with you, and it's a long enough trip. You know, there's just enough things that added up. It was like, let's just do it. And it was like, you know, $1,800 bucks, something like that, to get it brought out here. And renting a car for 3 weeks was about that same price. Not to mention you add insurance to the rental car. And then
the
drop-off fee in another state or another location even is a huge unknown. Sometimes it's only $100.
Yeah.
I've been smacked with a $700 fee, $800 fee, but that was only two states over.
Yeah.
I'm like, Salt Lake City to Jacksonville, you want to bet that's not going to hit for, you know, add a comma in there somewhere?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to take that chance. And, I just
here you
trip.
Are.
Yeah, just dropped the truck. Brought the truck. It'll be in Salt Lake City tomorrow, I think. But, it's just one of those things where that is – when you were talking about judgment calls, that you know, getting better at the judgment, I'm like, I wonder if that was one of my bad judgment calls. You know, like I was the first thing that came to my mind was like, oh, man.
Should I have? Yeah, exactly. You start questioning yourself.
You do. You really do. I mean, this trip, it was one of those judgment calls that I had to make. And if it wasn't for the owner specifically calling me, asking, hey, can you please just wrap this region?
Yeah.
And I was like – yeah, I'll do this. This is probably the last one I'm going to do. And I've said this a couple of times, but we've also not been at this size. We haven't hit these new capacities. I haven't been thinking 5-6 moves ahead. I haven't looked. I haven't planned this extensive on where the company is going to go. Like, I haven't looked into statistics my industry is $28 billion. Why am I only doing $2 million? You know, I hadn't looked at that and went, okay, how do we get there? You know, I heard this story. This guy, he was a dentist. And he's, you know, entrepreneur too, and he was trying to figure out how to grow his thing, what his skills were.
Clean more teeth.
I don't know his name actually.
I said clean more teeth. That's how it grows, bro. No. You pull more teeth or clean more teeth.
Well, what he did was, you know, dentists, they go through almost as much schooling as doctors. They're highly in debt, and it's just like beating up on them. So he would go to these dentists that just getting out of school is like that started practice. Said, "I'll pay off your debt for 50% of the company."
For how much?
50%. And he just did it to like hundreds of these dentists. The dude's net worth's like $800 million. He's got like one of one vehicles, and you know, like I've seen pictures inside the garage that I'm not like. There's not on social or anywhere. That's
a good idea. So we just need to get a list of dentists that are graduating college.
Literally, they've got like $500,000 of debt. You buy 50%. Dude, dentists make some freaking money.
Yeah, they do.
And so I was like, I wonder if I could do that in my industry. I could buy 50% of these shops, pay off all their equipment or something. And they're pumping out signs and graphics. I'll do the install, so I'm getting it on both ends. It's just something I thought. Started thinking about more and more. Like that guy, dude.
Yeah.
$800 million is not a joke. Like that's a lot of freaking money.
Yeah.
And you know, one of one type Bugattis. Okay, you have my attention.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, you had my curiosity.
Yeah. Well, now you have my attention. He had like you know different buildings that were historic that were getting taken down. He like bought the arch. I can't remember which baseball field, but he like bought a piece of that wall and put it into that garage and like nobody has seen this garage. He's this cool little guy that you don't even know about. He's almost a billionaire, but he's very private, but he's got some cool freaking stuff, man.
let's talk just real quick. I want to touch on, you know, how we met.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the RET syndicate. The reason why I want to talk about that is because I think that you were still pretty early on in business. You weren't more than what, one or a couple years deep into your business at that point when you were starting to shell out whatever 60-70 grand for the year to join a mastermind group. You know, let's talk about you starting to invest in yourself. Was that the first move that you made to say, okay, I need to start surrounding myself with higher minds. I need to start investing into improving self.
So I had owned a construction company before I got into this industry.
Okay.
So 2014, so my dad passed away in December 2013. So 2014 is when I started. And about a few months into, I was just like, this is where I went through the dark phase of I was like homeless and living on people's couches and things like that. To get a lease, I had to get a signed letter from my new employer to say, yes, this guy is starting at this such a wage that he can pay this rent. And it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch of debt from being a missionary for several years, and then I was my dad's caregiver. It was this big mess of financial and just life. Trying to get my life. Yeah. It was life. And trying to get through my dad's stuff, and I still haven't really ever confronted it. I should probably see somebody at some point.
Go but, do an ayahuasca trip, bro. Yeah, everything will come out.
Something, I'm sure it'll be if anybody got a hold of me, it would probably be a really disaster for about a month. But anyway, so I was in that situation, and I started working for this company. And one night I found my best friend. I had this, I call it the 6 months from hell because, so my dad died. Then someone that was considered my grandmother, she passed away. I was pet sitting for somebody, and their dog got hit by a car right in front of the house.
Oh, wow.
And then I got this phone call that my best friend was killed in a car accident. This is all in a 5 month. It was 6 months by the time I got fired and stuff, but I found out my best friend got killed in a car accident. The next day I showed up at work, brand new job. I've been there for like a week and a half. And I'm like, I was like, dang, I got to ask them to go to his funeral. And they were like, before we get to whatever you need to talk to us about, basically you're fired. And I was like, awesome. Okay.
I just started. How?
Yeah. So they're like, you are not able to keep up with us. There's a difference in construction backgrounds. You know, I was finished carpentry. They were like framers. And so I'm like trying to get this stuff all perfect because I'm trim guy. And they're like, dude, you're taking way too long.
You know,
like,
it on and throw a nail in it, bro.
Exactly. Just toenail it. Okay? But that firing is what kind of pushed me. I'm like, all right, I'm my own business now. And so each job I had been doing.
How old were
side
you at that time?
23. Oh. I just turned 24.
Okay.
So I went to the funeral and all that stuff, and I did 3 years in a row of construction, and I had hit $250,000 3 years in a row. And I'm like, okay, look, this isn't working for me. I have much bigger aspirations than $250,000. I'm not going to hit any of this stuff at this level. I got to level up. So I started listening to Dave Ramsey show, and I was like, this is great for the regular person. And I knew then I'm not a regular person.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not going to work for me. It got me out of debt. It was great. For that, but it's not going to get me where I want to go. This is not going to get me to $100 million. So I started listening to Tim Ferriss, and I thought that stuff was cool, but I cannot see myself only working 4 hours a week. Yeah. But I learned a lot in that book just about the general mindset stuff. And I started listening to more Gary Vee and Jocko, and other people started kind of popping up in the personal development space. And there was a lot about finding a mentor. And so I met this lady. Her name's Heather. And she's kind of been with me ever since, where she taught me the first thing, first time I ever heard about core values, first time I heard about building a SOP, first time learning. But all the basic stuff that now is basic, then I was like, this is mind-blowing, or this is rubbish. This is ridiculous. Like, what the heck? But it was kind of a learning what was dumb and what was real from her. It was really a big deal. So I doubled. I did $500,000. And that is when I met Ryan Williams. I'd met Heather, and I randomly came across Ryan Williams on Instagram.
I love that guy.
That dude is a stud. Yeah. I owe
we
him
were with
so
him a
much.
Couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And that guy has done, like, I don't think the impact of him replying to a DM is ever going to be, I don't know how that's ever going to be known, because I know Gary Vee was all about just DM these people, DM, and Tim Ferriss was also like, just talk to all these people, try that, you never know, kind of thing. And I just like, first of all, I liked his name, The Invictus. That's always been one of my favorite poems. And then it's just cool guys, Navy SEAL, had the Lamborghini, he had just got it and stuff, and I was like, this guy's awesome. I like his
shirts.
And
he wrapped
it. He did have it wrapped, yeah. But I wasn't doing it. I did not like, even to this day, I don't like wrapping cars myself. Every time I'm asked to do one, I'm like, oh, man. It's fun, but it's so much work, man. You got to be so good. If you're good at it, awesome. I'm not good at it. I have to really work at it. But anyway, so I sent him a text, or I sent him a DM, and I was like, hey, I'm going to be in Austin. He had just moved to Austin at the time. I was like, hey, I'm going to be in Austin. Any chance that I could, you know, he grab a drink? He's like, dude, I actually just moved back. He moved out from Austin. He's only lasted a few months there. He's like, this is terrible.
Yeah. So, I was going to say, I didn't even know he had a stint
in Austin.
It
was like, dude, between the Lamborghini, the guns, his whole thing, he just, his name and Navy SEAL and all that stuff. I was like, I really want to know this guy. And his business stuff, it was just a couple of little videos, were really amazing. So he's like, I moved back to San Diego, but if you're ever in San Diego, let me know. And so I was like, this is the first time I ever witnessed, brain glitching on what it is. It's kind of like speaking it into existence or the
manifesting.
Manifestation. Okay. Yeah. So I was like, dang it, I haven't had a job in San Diego in a long time, but if I get one, I need to go there. So I need to get one. So I didn't even tell the clients. Usually if I want to go somewhere, if I want to go to Hawaii or Alaska or Wyoming, I have all my clients just be like, hey, you guys got anything over there? I can make it a business trip. You know, you have anything I can do? I didn't even tell them. And the next day I got a job in San Diego. So here's the worst part. Wow. I got the job in San Diego, went out there, and he happened to not be available after that. So I took that chance to go to meet with Ryan. Now, again, mind you, I don't know that much about him except for what's on social media. But I took that chance. He couldn't make it. So
Ryan, you look cool on social media.
And you look cool on social media.
You know, don't we all?
So anyway, so then he was like, dude, I'm sorry. I'm busy up in, I don't remember where he was. And he's like, well, try again another time. And so it was several months later. I got another job, a couple of jobs out there. And so I DM'd him before I accepted. I was like, I'm going to be there in such and such time. Can we meet up for drinks? And he was like, yeah. So I was like, I've got a couple of days this time, because it was kind of all over California. And so it worked out for us to meet and get drinks. And I cannot tell you, just talking to somebody else that thought like I did. I literally thought I was the only one, because every time I talked to somebody about I can't do this. I can't play this little game. I can't be in a sandbox. I set the box on fire. Like, I cannot take this little world that people want to be in. Like, when people think that small, I just can't do it. Like, so I'm thinking this whole time, like a couple of years at this point, something's wrong with me. And everybody else is like, dude, you're doing $500,000, or you're doing 250K. And I'm like, do you realize that you're not making jack of that? Like, for one, two, that is not anywhere close to where I want to be.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? And just talking to Ryan for like an hour, it was like my mind was blown. And he is who put me on to Andy Frisella. And he had told me about the Arte Syndicate, and then I had been in Spokane the first year that he was in it. And so when I was driving through Spokane, I saw him post that he was in Coeur d'Alene. So I knew of it, and I was kind of following his thing.
His journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so after I met with him that one day, he had posted it to social. It was like, dude, you're a cool guy, or something like that. I'm not. You want to know how uncool I was growing up? I was a skinny, tiny little kid because of all my heart problems. I was the dinkiest little dude. I could never keep up with anybody. no physical attribute. Like, dude, my heart was beating twice to every normal person's once. So I couldn't keep up with anybody. But I still had work ethic. I just couldn't do as much as everybody else. But I was the most uncool kid growing up, that when he posted that and I reshared it, I literally got my friends and my own brother, who he's love my brother, but he texted me. He's like, dude, what did you say to that guy to make him think you were cool? I literally got those texts from people. Yeah. Like, what kind of lies are you telling this guy? We know you, bro. Like, what kind of lies are you telling this guy? And so after that, he actually had told Andy about me when the next thing came around and was like, you need to try to let this guy in. And he, you know, you get the bonus if you had brought somebody into the group.
Yeah.
Ryan sent me his cut of the bonus every month from me paying the monthly fee. Yeah. He's like, dude, I ain't in this for the money. He's like, you got something.
Yeah.
You need to be in here. And I was so scared going to freaking Coeur d'Alene. Like, I was excited, but I was scared of my freaking mind because
everyone was.
Yeah. Well, Ryan was the most successful person I'd actually known personally. And I was kind of went down this journey, and I've been listening to tons of podcasts and books, but when you actually have a communication like I am with you guys right now, it's a different animal. You sense that there's like, oh my gosh, they're just like I am, or oh, we have this in common. We're not going to agree on everything, but there are a few core things that you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not crazy. And I spend so much time by myself and being told that I'm crazy that you're like, oh, maybe I am crazy. And then you come across Ryan and then the other guys in there, you become good friends with Scott, Quentin, you guys. I mean, just the more people that I was starting to get to know, I'm like, oh my gosh, there are more, you know, like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And I was scared. I was so scared. I ran into a few other guys at the airport, and I was like, I was the smallest business. I was the youngest guy. And I'm like, oh man, maybe I don't belong here. Like, of so much doubt.
The imposter syndrome was high.
As soon as I got into, I was so excited, but as soon as I got in that bus, I was listening to them talk, and they're like, oh yeah, so-and-so took a helicopter, or so-and-so did this, or so-and-so flew private. And I'm like, oh my gosh, flying private? Like, oh my gosh. I was freaking out. Like, over this
I was stuff. In the back of the plane next to the shitter on the commercial
That's
plane.
That's literally where my brain was at. I was like, oh my gosh. And like, I think we had got upgraded to first class in one of the flights, and we saw a few other people that I had known from social that were in the group, and they were in first class, and I'm like, I'll bet you they paid for their first class. You know, like my brain was like, oh my gosh, I could never pay for that because I just spent all my money to get in. I literally just like, you know, Ryan suggests this. I'm going to get to meet Ed and Andy. I'm going to be around these other guys. They are where I want to be. Okay. I knew of Ed Milet from somebody before I knew about Andy. Mm-hmm. But like when I heard Andy speak, I don't know if it's that he's just a redneck from the South like I am or what, but I like connected with him a little more.
Yeah.
But Ed was fascinating to me because being a redneck, owning a private jet or what Ed was living was the fascinating whole lifestyle, to me.
Yeah.
It was fascinating because I hadn't, you know, dude, I lived in a freaking cow pasture. I lived in a tent. I lived in a bus. I lived in nothing. So like, this is fascinating to be like, oh my gosh, this is insane. So I had just gone all in on that thing. And I went and I was scared out of my mind getting to meet you guys a little bit. Again, realizing, snap, I'm the youngest, I'm the smallest business in there. Dude, what am I doing? And now I still get nervous. I ain't going to lie. Every time I went to an Apex event, it wasn't really for me. But I was around a few people. I got to know Aaron Wagner and Scott Simons, these titans that are just doing this amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I also learned a couple other things. A lot of people were there because their checks cashed, you know, their credit card cleared.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody else that's in the group, and I'll keep his name private, but he was like, I'll bet. If you got all, there's like 110 of us, I think, total. He goes, I'll bet 25 of us are legit. The rest of them are like this close to losing it. Or they're doing stuff that's real shady, not doing it right. Or along that, like he was like, there's very few people. And I'm starting to realize that there's a lot of people that I'm like that were talked really big and that like, oh, they're crushing it. And they had a good game. They talked a good game. And I was like in such awe while I was there. And then they just disappeared. They're not on social anymore. And then I start looking up. I'm like, oh, snap, this guy's going through bankruptcy. He told like 10 people. He sold the same house to like 10 people or stuff like that. You know, things like that. I'm like,
did his lifestyle look pretty cool prior?
It did look pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so that's when I was like, Ryan is so genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And he is like, he has probably taught me more about be who you are and fuck everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's like, you need to focus on you, focus on what you're building. Grow smart. One guy who's In the three comma club, he had told me, I was like, hey, how do I get there? Because I'm sick and tired of this, you know, this couple of million thing, this few million. I was like, I really want to, you know, I want to add a zero to that. Like, how do we do this? And he was like, dude, he's like, you need to really work on your SOPs and break them, because until you get those SOPs being unbreakable and doing a SWOT analysis every week or whatever, he goes, if you 10X your business today, he goes, and I'm telling you this in love because I've made all the same mistakes. He goes, your business will be a shit show. And so I was like, I need to stop looking at all these people that have these nice flashy lifestyles, because half of them are fake. Mm-hmm. And the other half are this close to bankruptcy, and I don't want to be either one of those.
Yeah.
And so I need to focus on me and only me and my business. And
too many people focus on looking the part rather than actually being the part.
Yeah, and I'm fine with not looking flashy. Yeah. Like I told you beforehand, I walk into a Marriott or something that I definitely don't belong in. You know, like I'm wearing a camo shirt and a camo bag or a backward hat or something. They're like, can we help you? You know, like, and then they pull my thing up and they're like, oh, you've been with us for a long time.
Hey, the motel aides down the street, sir.
I'll come in with Samson. Yeah, so Samson, he has been to 40 of the 50 states with me. So he has been on airplanes, high-rise hotels, whatever. And they'll be like, I'm not sure he's supposed to be in here. Because his service vest is a tactical vest with the service thing on it. And they're like, I'm not sure he's supposed to be. And then they're like, oh, okay. They go through the whole thing and realize that he's, you know, they have our little notes and stuff. But yeah, Ryan really was like, dude, screw what everybody else is doing. You need to focus on you. And I'm trying to remember what the first time he told me that. It was something to do with, I think it was in fitness. So again, I was the tiniest kid growing up. So many heart problems. Spent half my life in a freaking hospital. Finally got a surgery when I was 15. And I went from 5'4 to 6 foot in 8 months. Like, it was so fast. It was so painful. And I was just a tall, skinny kid.
I would like to say that I could relate, but this is a topic that I will trust.
Yeah, well, it was just
give you my trust.
Yeah, well, it was just like the mindset of being this small little kid.
Yeah.
And always looking at my friends like, dude, I wish I could bench press that. I wish I could start with 245 pound on either side when I bench press. I wish I could even lift that dumbbell, you know, or something like, you know, that's where it's always been. And I saw Ryan, he was doing some work, and I just commented, I was like, dude, yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait till I can get there. I wish I could get there, something like that. He's like, dude, you need to just focus on you. Screw what everybody else is doing. And I've had that screw everybody else for a long time, the last couple of years in particular, where I was like, I don't really care what so-and-so is doing anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, every now and then I get in my head a little bit like, snap, I haven't accomplished anything. And I'm like, dang, I'm 32. Why are we not here? Why isn't this? Why can't I retire my mom? Why can't I do this? Why is this such a problem? Why are we struggling to make this payment? Or whatever it is, you know, like my brain's just going down that road. But even my own family, they'll send funny memes to me about, you know, fuck everybody, essentially. And it's like, it's the freaking truth. There's just people that will hate on you or people that don't understand you. And I made a reel using one, and it was that guy who says, you know, there's some motherfuckers out there that will dislike you for just no reason at all. And then the guy laughs and he's like, you know, fuck them. And it's the truth. And again, sorry, mom, I'm cussing a little bit here, but look, it's just like, you really have to focus on just you. Why do I care what the other guy is doing? You know, winners focus on winning, losers focus on winners. Now there are people that are winning that I want to be like, and I am going to figure out what they're doing and I'm going to focus and learn from that. But I'm going to focus on my own game. And I don't even know, like, I don't care who my competition is. In a lot of cases, I work with them.
Yeah.
There's one of the guys who's the best in the industry who's only a couple miles from my shop. I decided to work with him. Anytime I get a supercar wrap request, I send him on over to Austin down at his shop. And he started this whole big organization in the industry. The dude's crushing it.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm going to focus on what I'm good at. I'm good at putting these people together. I'm good at having reach, getting this stuff taken care of. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to win. And so all the people, I remember somebody telling me, like, I'm never going to make it. Like, specifically, somebody extremely close to me told me I would never make it. And I remember the gas station, that gate gas station right there on A1A. I mean, I remember that gas station. I remember pulling in. I was like, holy crap, he just said that to me. Yeah. You know? And you do remember that stuff. But it's like, I don't focus on that. Like, that's not the thing. I focus on the people that were in the room with us. You know, I want to focus on what Andy and Ed are doing. Like, how do I get – Ed told us on the last hour RTA call, I think he was at like 700 million, 800 million. Dude bought his own island. He's got a private jet. He's crushing it, okay? Like, he's super busy. He outworks me and everybody else, and he's crushing in all his freaking areas. I'm like, that's the people I want to focus on, because, like, how do you get that 700 million? I want to buy that island for my mom, you know, or whatever, whoever wants. You know, like, I want to make sure my family – we can go rent a yacht for a week and whatever freaking waters we want to, you know? And I'm like, that's why I wanted in that room. Because those are the people that are doing it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could focus on the critics or you could focus on the things that bring inspiration.
Yeah.
Like flat out, there's going to be critics and a lot of people will focus on what the critics are saying and therefore they get dragged. They're getting dragged to that level,
yeah.
The critics level versus finding a source of inspiration, somebody that you could look up to, aspire to be, yeah. And kind of idolize and I guess I shouldn't say really idolize because we shouldn't really idolize anybody, but right. Basically copy and paste, right? Whatever yeah. it is that they're doing, I want to try that.
And Ryan was that for me. Like, he's yeah. a few years ahead of me. And so when he was talking on y'all's podcast even about the stuff they went through, they went through freaking identical mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah. Last year freaking sucked. Actually, what happened last year made this year suck. So those people that left, the reason why I had to change all the systems, we had three different employees make a grand total of mistakes that totaled $250,000. Mm. That is a lot of freaking money for a redneck, okay? Like, it is. Well, I'm a blue-collar guy. I work super hard. I have pulled 58-hour days. I have slept 1 hour a day.
That's multiple days.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the point.
I guess. I guess yeah. it's more, we'd my have to shift, call that more of a shift.
My than shift a day. Was 58 hours. Yeah. I did not yeah. sleep for 58 hours to accomplish some things, to get some stuff covered. My first $10,000 week, I worked 7 days straight, sleeping 1 hour a night in my car, in a gas station parking lot, 1 hour a night for a whole, like, I have put some serious effort into every little thing I own, any little thing that I have accomplished. And $250,000 in mistakes from people because I was focused on other parts of the business and thought I could trust them. They made that many mistakes, like $250,000. That is a lot. So I've spent this whole year paying back all of that stuff. So I haven't made any progress this year because I spent it all trying to clean up last year's mess. After I fired them all, you yeah. know, like, and it wasn't the, oh, they made a mistake. They learned from it, move on. No, they freaking made a mistake. And some of them just straight up left because they knew they're in trouble.
Yeah.
And the other ones, they had to get let go. But it was kind of like, I heard Ryan tell this stuff. He's very, he'll tell you, he's straight up. He's genuine. He'll be like, yeah, we made this mistake, and this mistake. Whatever you do, don't do this. You should do this. He will answer a call. If I send, hey, dude, I need some help, he will call me back. That dude he's awesome. And so when he recommended me getting into that, I was like, all right, well, here it goes. Like,
if you say so.
Yeah, dude, it's going to cost me a ton of money, but I'm going in and I'm going to learn from this stuff. These are the guys I want to be with, and it's going to take me a minute. But
yeah.
You still have a lot of relationships from that.
I do.
We were talking about
yeah.
Touch down in Florida.
Yep.
Still communicate with him. I mean, there was just a lot of good people.
Yeah, and there are people that here's the thing. The people that are doing well, if you're the right person, they'll invest in you. So Toucher, for instance, his minimum to invest in them is $1 million. I don't got $1 million. I don't even know if I had $100,000 at the time.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, I got you. You can come with me.
Yeah.
You got somebody at that level willing to take your stuff. You know, that's insane.
Give it to him.
Yeah. And so Ryan, same thing. Him being several years ahead of me in an 8-figure company is willing to take time to talk to little old me at the time, you know, like go get a drink. Time out of his very busy day to do that. And then he'll answer my call. I got his number. Like he was answering my call and recommended me for something else. The 3 Comma Club member down in Orlando, that dude is amazing. He will shoot me straight and he will answer my call. If I send him a text and said, hey, I need some help with something, he will call me right back. Yeah. And if it's something that requires a little more effort, he's like, hey, let's schedule an hour for here.
Let me ask you this. Where the hell would you be if you didn't make these investments to surround yourself with the people that you could now call when you have issues or problems or stresses in your business? Imagine doing all of that alone without the network that you currently have. Do you think that you would still be in business right now, or do you think that you'd just be, you know, still doing $500,000 pounding your head against the wall? Maybe you had thrown your hands up and quit and give up by now. Who knows, right?
I would have gone out of business in the pandemic, 1,000%.
So the power of investing into self and investing into a network group basically saved your business when the storm came.
Yeah, directly saved my business, and I can tell you how. Our first ever RTA event. Remember, we did the Q&A.
Yeah.
And Ed was talking to us. He's like, "Look," and nobody was like pro-Trump or not. Like, nobody, it was not a political thing. He just said, look, pay attention to what's going on, because the one thing that they don't got on Trump right now is the economy, so they're going to tank it. Like, yeah, they straight up told us that. Like, I'm not even a master. Like, I didn't care about politics at all. I like current events just because I'm a history nerd. But, like, I was like, oh, I should pay attention. So I started paying attention starting in August. And I'm like, oh, they're not wrong. This is getting a little weird. Then we went to Whistler. They said it again. Guys, this is January, early January. It's election season. Pay attention. Stash cash. Be ready. So I did, and even this cash that I stashed wasn't enough. But we had a – so when this was all going down, there was a bunch of Arte guys were, like, getting on calls randomly. Yeah. And I just happened to just, like, oh, I'm sitting at my house, and I'll click on this call.
Yeah.
And they had mentioned the EIDL. And I'm so pissed that I had to take anything from the government to help through that. But that EIDL got us through the freaking pandemic, you know, like – I was loyal, the loyalty thing, I was loyal to every single person that was on it. Now, a few people quit just because I don't know why they would quit during a pandemic, but they quit. And we actually had to hire people during the pandemic to keep things rolling. But, like, if I didn't have those people saying, hey, here are some resources to help you get through this stuff, I had, you know, McBroom helping me with the taxes. I had Fedora helping me with different options loans on figuring out how to get through it. There was Ryan, who how they adapted to be considered essential
business.
And same with me, like I service essential businesses, so I was able to do some. But there was, dude, again, 49 states were shut down. Florida was the first. For Florida and Georgia started to open in Texas and things came, but there's a definite drop for that quarter.
Yeah.
And the grace of God got us a couple of jobs that literally paid our overhead, like just shy of the overhead. But between that and
the loan
cash
and
loans
that.
We were able to make it through and pay vendors and stuff like that. But I remember being on that phone call. I was on that phone call for like 3 minutes, and that came up, and then the phone call was over, and that's what got me going. Caitlin took a picture of me one night, and I was wearing one of Ryan's shirts that said, you know, find a way or make a way. And I was like, I am going to find a way to get through this. I will make a way to get through this. Like, there is no ands, ifs, or buts. This is going to happen. But, yeah, dude, if I wasn't paying attention to stuff as it was coming, if I didn't have the relationships of knowing what was going on at least a little bit to – realize to be on these calls, and then you have different people that I was able to connect with. The Saunders, they were talking to me, like, I think one of their kids has a heart issue like mine, and just kind of they connected with my mom a little bit about that, and just making those connections in a personal as well as a professional way. I mean, there was directly investing in that has turned this stuff around, and it's going to take me a while to climb out of this. Like, it was between last year's screw ups from employees and me not paying attention to what they were doing, and you know, the franchise thing, and then just the pandemic, like, it just all kind of stacked up, you know, and it's just extremely
painful.
But I have no doubt that I'll pull myself out of anything, and I have also know that a lot of things that I have going at the moment are going to be really big, you know, and I'm really excited for it. So.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes just to get to the big shit, you got to survive.
Dude,
you
know? And it has.
That's really
like
what
last,
it comes down to.
Yeah, I would
know?
Say the last 3 or 4 months, like I said, I've just been in this really dark place.
Yeah.
More mentally than, I mean, the business, we're paying our bills. We're not growing massively. We're paying our bills. And it took me, sometimes you have to go through that mentally yourself to get to what the person you need to be able to run a bigger company.
Yep.
And that's kind of where I was like, I did not waver in my discipline. I still work out every day.
Despite the emotion.
Yep. I still work out every day. I still read. I still do. I'm basically on 75 hard just as a lifestyle in general. I still have alcohol and stuff every now and then, but it's like not, my discipline is there. I did not let up even when I was in this massively crazy
dark.
Like, dude, I have not gone through that, and I can't even pinpoint what brought me down to that, you know. I was thinking about it, but I know that I was there, you know. It was like, I hate to say burnout, because I was still working and I like what I do, but it was still like, I was like, oh my gosh, man.
You can like what you do and still get burned out, bro.
Yeah. Maybe that's what
I mean.
It
think
is,
about rock stars on the road. I mean, it sounds like a cool life.
Yeah.
You know, being on the road and everybody screaming your name or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, they get burned out too.
That is true. I know, just even yesterday, just going into the Grand Canyon, just that there's some of those things that I need. I probably
help
need
shift
to put,
your perspective.
It does. And I think maybe I need to take that a little more seriously, maybe put a mandated trip every quarter for myself, or I don't know, I've come up with something, but I know, like, that was different for me, you know, like that was like, oh, there it is. You know, like it was a weird, no way to describe it sort of thing. Cause I still do stuff. I go to the Everglades and hunt pythons and stuff. So I get out into the the stuff. Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell
no. Come on, man. Did you see the picture of that 10 footer I caught on my phone, man?
Hell no.
Yeah, it's freaking awesome. But this bad boy was crossing the street. She was pissed, man. She was hissing at me.
Yeah, that means leave it alone. Usually, I mean, the normal human hiss back up.
Yeah, that means you go grab it. That means you go for it. But no, it's like I did some things that I was like, this is what I used to do to fill myself up, and I was like, okay, this was good. I'm not saying it was bad, and I regret going in there, but like, I need something for me, you know, and I think I need to spend more time on doing that. I know when I went to that Patrick Bet David thing, the first chapter is about who are you and what kind of drives you. And here's the funny part. I know a lot of people that know me, they think I'm crazy. And that's fine. I kind of thrive off of being known as that. But
better than being known as normal.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. But there's four different levels of personal development, or just personalities and personal development. And there's regular, there's like driven, but there's also like, you know, working regular 9 to 5. There's, you know, just regular stuff and even high performers. And then there's another level that was madness. And I was like, I check every one of those boxes. Like he has like madness in the description. I have to show you afterward. I have it somewhere on my phone. But I was like, huh, so I'm not crazy. And you had mentioned the personal piece earlier. And he was saying, look, you guys can, there's a level of, there are some people, not necessarily even levels of it, but like there are some people. He's like, you will never find it. I'm sorry. Just want to let you know that. Like, I was like, oh, snap. And I'm like, I kind of agree with it, and I kind of disagree. I think it depends on, well, it kind of depends on the personality. But it was like, for me, there's this, one of my favorite people in the Bible is David. He is the biggest screw up, but also the epitome of man, of being a man, spiritually and physically. You know, he's the warrior. He was the Lion of Judah. He was the... So even, you know,
we have... Is this David and Goliath?
Yeah, David. David and Goliath, David.
Okay, I know that story.
Yeah.
I've heard it.
Yeah. So
he's a hell of a shot.
Yeah.
So I hear.
Well, if you read the book, the stories of David and his mighty men and the things that they accomplished is fascinating. Anyway, when he became the king, finally, there's a verse in one of his songs that is, I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Every time I read it, I'm sure anybody, ask Vaughn, maybe probably a better person to ask than me, but when I read it the first time, I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. When he was trying to bring peace, God had specifically told him once, like, you're a man of war. You can't build my temple because you're a man of war. So David got all the stuff ready so that King Solomon could build the temple, who was David's son. So, but when I was looking at it, I was like, I kind of related it a little bit different. So... I want peace too. Like I want to find that peace in myself. And this is so, you can cut this out of the podcast.
Because I don't know in my own head
if this is even right or the best way to say it. But like my own private demons don't want me to have that peace.
Right.
Because I try to sleep and you can look at my Whoop, man. I got so many freaking terrible nights of sleep. I can't quiet my demons. I have the hardest time quieting my demons, you know, and it's a very difficult, that's probably some discipline I need to work on, is more mental discipline, Joe Dispenza type stuff. But also like I struggle with that a lot. And so I'm like, I wonder if I'm that guy in my generation of my family generation, you know, that Ed had talked about, the one showed up. I'm that one. It's not for me to have that peace, but it might be for Gabriel and Michael, my kids.
Right.
You know, they might have that peace. I'm scared for that because, you know, strong men create good times create weak men create hard times create strong men. You know, I don't want my kids to be the ones that are creating.
Just because you give them a good life, you don't want them to be weak. Right.
So, I mean, I named them after archangels for a reason. This isn't a joke. Mm. You know, like, even my parent company is named Archangel because my kid, you know, this is what we're leaving for them. We put this stuff into a trust. We took this stuff incredibly seriously. Mm. And, you know, I want my young men to be men. You know, Bedros said in a podcast with, I remember who it was, he said, you know, there's a difference between nice guys and good men. Mm. And there's a very big difference between them. You know, the nice guys, they have no core values. They'll say whatever it takes to get whatever they want, whether it's a lie, cheat, steal. You know, then you have the good men. And the good men, they will stand in line. They will take the bullet. They will provide. They will stand up for what's right. They're disciplined. They have core values. But they also will come home, lay on the floor, play with their kids, bathe them, put them to bed. You know, they're gentle just as much as they are.
Yeah.
With this, I know your podcast, Adam Smith, how much he loves his he hates the cliches and stuff. But there is some cliches that have a thing, and that's one of them is like, you know, the difference between nice guys and good men. You know, there's a big difference.
There's an origin. The origin of the word nice is actually, like we talked about this with Jeff Lerner on our podcast, the origin of word nice is dumb.
Yeah.
Right? And the way that I took that is like, oh, yeah, it's true. Like the nice guy, right, is the guy that's easily fooled, is the guy that's a pushover, is the guy that's walked on. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, not necessarily are they just doing something to, you know, I guess be a taker, but they're just easily pushed around and walked on, right? And so that's kind of like the origin of the word nice. Like nice. So when someone says, "Oh, he's a nice guy," you're not giving him a great compliment, right?
Well, a nice guy is not going to put up a fight, right? Yeah. Basically, is what they're saying. They don't have a line or a standard or values to they say no, that's not okay in this situation. You know, a lot of nice people, so to speak, adapt to whatever the environment is.
Yeah.
Right? And rather than them be who they are, regardless of the environment or circumstance that they're in, they're easily swayed. When a man knows what his values are, what his standards are, and he will not sway from that, it doesn't matter. Regardless of the circumstance, regardless of the situation, he knows who he is and he'll stand in his truth, right? Yeah. And that's really what it comes down to.
So yeah, like if you're somebody that's listening to this podcast, it's like, man, like, oh, I actually get a lot of gratification out of people when they tell me like, ah, man, he's a nice guy. It's like, you need to flip that, man. Like you want people to start, you know, remembering you as a person that's like, dude, he's a great dude. He's a great guy. He's a good man.
A badass motherfucker.
Nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, I prefer that one.
Yeah. No, well, that's another one. Andy's used this once. It was the first time I heard it. And it was kind of the equivalent where he was like, you need to walk into the room and believe you are the biggest, baddest motherfucker in there. But you also need to walk in there and go, I don't know anything. You know, you need to, you know what room you're walking into. You know, you can be the alpha at whatever table you're in, but also, hey, that guy that's brand new here has been here for 36 minutes, you know, in your office. He might have an idea that's going to change everything. You don't know. You have to pay attention. Now, you know, be smart about it. But, like, you have to be learning and paying attention to that stuff, but also believe that you're at that level. So I know when I went to the Arche thing, you know, in most rooms before that, I felt like I was the biggest, baddest dude there. When I walked in there, dude, I was like 2 inches tall, and I just wanted to crawl into a corner until I got to know somebody. If Ryan hadn't been there, because at least I knew somebody, I probably would have been screwed, because I want to be by myself. If given a choice to be in a group with people or go hang out by myself, it's by myself 9 times out of 10. Like, I just, 9 times out of 100. That's just where I thrive. It's just, I want a minute. I want to shoot my gun or shoot my bow or whatever. I just want to be by myself.
Disconnect.
Like, that's where I want to do. So Ryan and I, just being able to, okay, I know somebody here, and then people knew him, and I kind of got to know his circle from there. But, like, I know in that room, whenever I go to an RHA event, most of the time, whatever room I'm in, I am the dumbest guy in there. And so I need to listen to what's happening in there and learn what's happening there. Even nowadays, I've learned to listen more in the last 3 years than the 30 years before that of being alive. Because I don't know anything. And I have to remember that, because those guys in there are doing 8, 10, 100 million, billion, you know, you better pay attention. You know, when I was in the room, when Wags went and got coffee with me, I told him about what I was doing, and then I freaking listened to what he was doing. And I was like, I was paying attention to what he was saying. And, you know, I mean, with you guys built something epic here. Like, what do I need to do to have my name on the front of the building, in the middle, on the top, where you guys are at, you know? I took a picture on the way in, and I was like, "That's freaking awesome!" Like, my friends have that building.
It was kind of cool when we first did it. Yeah. You know, like when we moved from a shithole office to this office, and we like, dude, let's put a big old sign at the top of the building, right in the middle.
You know, like, I know when I got mine. It was cool. It's not lighted or anything. It's just a piece of white epoxy.
That I drove by at night, dude, and saw the sign, like on the boulevard. I'm like, look, babe, there's our sign. You know, that was like 8 years ago. But
yeah, yeah. I know when I got to our new offices and we had just the little sign, because in our first office we just rented a little office inside the building.
Yeah.
But this, we own this whole suite. So we put that up there. I was just like, look at that.
Yeah, dude.
It's on the door. Yeah. Next is the building. And then, you know, on the block, so to speak.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Before we wrap up, what advice would you give just young entrepreneurs, somebody that's 1, 2, 3 years into business that might be struggling right now?
I've always wondered how I would answer this question when somebody asked me it.
Well, you don't have to wonder anymore. When you answer it, you'll know.
There's a few things that I've always come up with. First of all, it is the education. Okay, so I'm a redneck from backwoods nowhere, Tennessee, and I never went to college. Everything I know has been through podcasts, talking to people like you, and books. So learn to love reading and learning as much as anything else that you got, because that is where you're going to learn the most. Because a lot of times, you can Google the questions that you got. Yeah. And if you go ask somebody a question that you can Google, they're just going to be pissed off.
Yeah.
I know whenever I went to my first RHA event that was a live event after being in the OGs with you guys, I was so annoyed because they had the syndicate on my name tag. And so they'd come ask me some questions. I'm like, when was the last time you pulled up Google? Like, why are you asking me that question? Like, I would just get really annoyed. And it wasn't because of impatience. It probably is partially impatience. But also, like, if you are asking that question, you are going to have a really hard time moving forward because, you know, that's a really basic question. If you're going to ask somebody a question, make it a valuable question that's hard to answer. Because if you can Google it and you go ask a billion of that, they will never answer another question from you again, you know? So loving to learn is probably the number one.
Learn thing. To love learning.
Mm-hmm. There it is. Learn to love learning.
Yeah.
And then discipline. It's Ed calls it habits and rituals, and that's fine. But discipline is for me. Like, you have your non-negotiables in your schedule. You know, you need to schedule your date night. You need to schedule time for yourself. You need to schedule stuff. But nobody can argue with you with taking their time if you are getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. From 4 to 8 in the morning, nobody's calling me. Nobody's texting me. I'm learning. I'm working out. I'm bettering myself for 4 hours in that morning. Yeah. And pushing the business forward. And you're not taking any time from your family. You're not taking any time from your employees. You've got 4 hours. Three, if you want to start at 7. 3 hours a day. 21 hours a week. You know, that's...
Invest time into self somewhere.
Yeah, but it's the discipline of it. So people say that all the time, but they're like, oh, well, I couldn't this morning, so I'm doing it tonight. Oh, crap, I couldn't do it tonight. Those are my non-negotiables. I mean, I work out every morning, and I work out hard. Yeah. That 4 to 8, 4 to 7, Saturday, Sunday too. None of this, you know, off on the weekend stuff. You can take your rest day if you want to. Find something that's like active recovery. Awesome. But those non-negotiables of pushing forward every day, that those little steps.
What is a rest day?
I don't know. I haven't had one in a while. So.
That'll be a harder thing for you to explain than advice.
My coach, she puts one in there, and I'm like, can we put something there? And she's like, well, you need to rest. I'm like, can you put something there? Like, So, learn, you know, discipline and learning to love to learn.
Love it, man.
Those are where I'd start.
So if somebody wants to reach out to you and connect with you, whether they want to do business with you or just chop it up with you, what's the best place to connect with you?
Probably Instagram. Okay. I just put what I think on there and what I'm doing and stuff I think
and
is
pictures
cool.
of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, pictures of the Grand Canyon, you know, shooting my bow. Yesterday. If you want to see my dog, he's on there too.
Yeah. Silent Partners there on the gram. But what's your Instagram handle?
It's a.p.1776.
Cool.
Yeah.
Guys, reach out to this individual, especially if you're an installer. You know, he obviously wants to grow his network. Absolutely. And just by you reaching out, he can put you in the network, obviously, after he vets you, make sure you do good business. But dude, it was a joy to have you. Yep. It's a joy to see
you.
It's been a minute. Anytime that we get individuals that we've had a long relationship with, especially that's attached to the RHA Syndicate, it's always special. So, bro, we appreciate you.
Thank
guys.
You for having me out.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, we hope you enjoyed today's show. Make sure you share the videos, share the episodes, and rate and review. Guys, we appreciate you. Till next time, keep kicking ass.